One of the most uncomfortable scenes in A24's Civil War, or the Civil War movie, takes place in a firefight between those who are wearing sort of loose uniforms around a Hawaiian shirt, referencing the Blue Boogaloo Boys, and they are in a firefight against those who are in a military uniform, those who are wearing a military uniform. And the distinction between them, the fighting forces in this scene, are Hawaiian shirts versus multicam, or something like it, like OCP. And this firefight is so uncomfortable, at least for myself, because of how dysfunctional it is. The let's call them the Hawaiian shirt crew are not well executing flanks and maneuvers, even though they kind of show that they may have had that opportunity, and they are not utilizing their tools very well. They're trying to use smoke to obscure a line of sight so that one of their guys can get to safety, and it doesn't go well, and it's just very disconnected, sort of this like bogged down firefight feel. And it's very uncomfortable because of that dysfunction. That dysfunction makes it feel like you're stuck, they're stuck. It's difficult, it's painful. And ultimately they go on, here's the spoiler, to win that firefight, not nearly in any form of a glamorous way. There isn't like they don't even show like a strategy or like a counter maneuver or a flank or anything like that. They end up entering the building where the uniformed fighters were sitting in, or they were fighting from, and they do this kind of sloppy-ish CQB maneuver. And it's not bad, it's not completely terrible. And if you've been through a shoot house or you've seen some practice as far as what CQB feels like when you're actually doing it, it does call back to some of that sluggishness and that like uncomfortable pacing. And the uncomfortable pacing of being in a shoot house is you want it to be smooth, but it's sort of an ebb and flow of momentum. And eventually these fighters stop halfway up a stairwell in one of the most vulnerable positions a person can be in. And they turn on all of these white lights, which in that environment, while they're trying to creep about, would give away their position. They turn all their lights on and then continue moving, which in that kind of scenario wouldn't be a good idea. What you'd want to see, and this is what we expect, and this is what we use in our kit for, is that this is why you have a momentary option for your flashlight on a firearm. So I can turn it on, see what I need to see, and then turn it off. And then turn it on, see what I need to see, and turn it off. So I'm not constantly making myself a beacon to where my location is or where I'm moving to or what I might be up to. And so that is the topic of today, is the difference between shooting and fighting. And then we're going to call back to an old dig that oftentimes gets slung across gun culture, and he doesn't know how to shoot. But if you notice that if you're watching on YouTube and you notice that the background is slightly different for this one, we are in Minnesota, and somebody else from Minnesota, perfect segue, is Obsidian Arms. And Obsidian Arms is the first sponsor of this show. They have seen what we've been doing, and I want to tell you a little bit about them, so lend me your ear. Obsidian Arms does a number of things, and they do a number of things well, but one of the things that they do best is that they make fine tools for gunsmithing. And those tools come with a lifetime warranty. If you say buy their AR-15 kit and have a mistake and you bend a rod or you break something, you can send that tool to Obsidian and they will replace it. It's a lifetime warranty. And that is something that sets them apart and brings more value than just the quality of the tools themselves. They also provide an OEM service. If you are working on a design, maybe a riser or a part that would go, a metal part particularly, for a firearm, give them a check, because give them a look, because they have a machine shop capable of producing many of these parts that we look to see come into reality. And so whether you're interested in building a semi-custom AR-15, or you're looking at for gunsmithing tools, or you have a design that you have completed and you want to see if they can manufacture it for you, go check out Obsidian Arms at obsidianarms.com. So back to the show, back to the talk on Civil War and shooting versus fighting. The accusation of he doesn't know how to shoot, on its face, is a very simple thing. We're most likely looking at some sort of ego battle between characters, and it's most oftentimes, by my observation, slung from somebody in one camp at somebody in another camp. It might be a competition shooter taking a dig at military individuals, or it might be a beef between two different instructors, or it might be a beef between two people who are not instructors. And so while the skill of being able to shoot is something that we highly value, particularly in the firearms or the gun culture, it comes at an odd time when we are getting so much better at so many things. It seems like it's an accusation that belongs to stay in the past. And the ultimate thing that we keep running into, or what we end up seeing this kind of conversation turn into, is sort of a what-if scenario drama where one person says, well, he doesn't know how to shoot, and the other person says, I have better intel, or let's actually, for the sake of this conversation, move the ego and the individuals out of it and look at the skill of shooting versus the complex skill of fighting. Now, a raid is a type of military maneuver that is popular today for movies and special operations and so on and so forth. But a raid, by definition, is something like an attacking of a location for the purpose of either taking out a high-value target or gathering intel, some strategic value of something that is at this location, but then it is quickly abandoned. So a raid would be different than, say, capturing a base. The raid is simply there to infiltrate, attack, exfiltrate, and leave, get out of Dodge. And so a raid is not intended to acquire strategic or to take control over a strategic area. A raid is meant to gain something of value, whether it's eliminating a specific target or acquiring specific information or materials at a location. You could think, you know, if the police are going to raid, if a police were to raid a meth den, they're not there because the meth den has a great, they're not there to take over the location of the meth den for the purpose of setting up shop and building an Arby's or whatever. No affiliation there. But their intent is to stop or cease the production of methamphetamines. And so a raid has many components to it. There has to be ascertaining the location that you're going to attack whatsoever. You have to figure out where you're going, what you're going there for, what's the objective. Then you need to gather intelligence on the area, which might be a map, a GRG, a grid reference guide according to the military. And you're looking for maybe a pattern of life of an individual. If there's a specific individual that is the target and you want to figure out what their habits are, what their capabilities of defense are. And so there's this intel gathering phase, and then there will be infiltration, getting to the location, executing the raid, and then exfiltrating or leaving. And the shooting part of that experience is very, very slim. In many cases, it never happens at all because the people who are participating in it have such an advantage over their target that the target immediately doesn't fight and there is no gunfighting whatsoever, or they're caught completely by surprise. And this is so very different than something that might happen, say, on a range when you're shooting targets or you're shooting a competition, because in a competition, you're solely focused on that shooting portion. And so a person who is a grandmaster level shooter can, with some confidence, say that they're probably a better shot than most people in the military. But that does not mean that they are better at doing the job of the soldier who is in combat. And we know this naturally, but I think it's important to air it out and distinguish it so that we have this tool when we're engaging in gun culture to recognize that that is not an argument that goes anywhere. It doesn't produce any value for us as an industry to openly criticize somebody for not being able to shoot, whether it's behind closed doors or through the internet or whatever. It can come across a little bit more like gossip, but it's not the same thing. And we intuitively know it, but I haven't seen something yet that I haven't seen a podcast or a YouTube kind of commentator that has addressed this point openly. Now, let's use this example. Oh, I can use the example of this scene from Civil War to make a point. There are multiple times, there's multiple points in that firefight where if somebody, one of the persons on either side of the team, was better at marksmanship, they could have taken an advantage. They could have gained, in essence, ended the firefight because they could have made the shot that they were shooting at. And that is, it's true. It would have helped. It would have made the situation better. And that is an example. We kind of intuitively know that if we're going to talk about being able to shoot in gunfights or anything like that, the morality of the use of force, capability does come into play, but it's not the same thing. The capability of an individual in being able to use a firearm does not satisfy moral requirements involved. Instead, it is just a piece of what we might be dealing with. It is a part of intel gathering. What is it about this person that I know that I might want to know if we might end up in a firefight? And so it's something that is important information to gather, but it's not really about competition at this stage. It's not, you know, they might say that war is the greatest game, but there is something very different going on in war than in games. Still, we know this intuitively. And what we oftentimes find is those who don't, or either can't or won't make this distinction, those who are choosing to be intellectually lazy about how they approach the use of force, are more likely to use it improperly. And that is something that we want to guard against. It's sort of the double-edged sword of the Second Amendment, and this idea that we have a right to bear arms is that we also have an individual moral responsibility to not only be capable with them so that we can use them well, but also so that we can be capable of making moral evaluations in the event that we are called, let's say, by circumstance to use force for the purposes of good. Now, I'm going to use another example, and that would be something that happened a couple of years back. I think there was a young man who was in a mall, and he was in a mall when somebody had that day decided to try to do a big bad and do a massacre. And this young man rose to the occasion, in a sense, and he engaged with his firearm and ended the slaughter, ended what would have been a massacre of sorts. And if you look at this kind of scenario, what we can take away from what happened here is that the young man was confident enough in his skill to use it effectively in the scenario that he found himself in. And confidence has a strange, not necessarily strange, but it has an important contribution to being able to use force effectively. Confidence, being different than bravado or artificial confidence, it is reflected in a person feeling confident that they can make the shot or even attempt to make the shot successfully. And what that looks like, what that looks like is this is why we practice. If you're new at shooting, and this is something that I've seen instructing, is that when somebody is new at shooting, they're very, very oftentimes solely focused on how accurate they are. Did they hit the target every time? Did they hit the target every time? And we're talking about people who are very, very new at shooting, very, very new at the skill. And they're so focused on being accurate that they don't build up being comfortable with the tool that they're using. And so comfortable, what I mean by comfortable or confident with that tool is that I know what it's going to do when I want it to do it. I know what the trigger does. I know what the trigger feels like. I know what the magazine release is, and I know what that does, and I know how to use it. And a lot of our individual training, particularly in the field of dry fire, is making ourselves confident enough in using that tool that our mind is not being pulled away from the circumstances that we are in to become focused and tunnel vision focused on that tool. And so whether or not you're picking up a new firearm, or you're new to shooting in some sense, or you've been skilled for some time and you're looking to add components, the first thing that we're, and you're, you know, helping other people out, then my recommendation is that as you're learning how to use force, particularly that with a firearm, one of the most important things to develop is confidence, not bravado. Because bravado will often, almost always does, fail people at the critical moment. When that, and we're going to use bravado as fake confidence, a loose definition for this conversation. And so if I am confident in my ability to shoot, then I can open up my mind to the, let's call it, tactics of an event. And so the men in this depicted scene in Civil War, if they were more proficient at shooting, they would have less constraint, less of their mental ram, let's call it, being consumed by that feeling of discomfort with their equipment. And this is what training does for us. You become familiar with your equipment. You know what it does. You know how it does it. You know where it works and how it works so that you can use it to the best of your abilities in complex situations. We would expect someone to learn how to shoot a handgun before we throw them into a CQB environment. At least we'd expect so, but then, you know, we kind of wonder, where's the graduating step between being able to do one and being able to do the other? Outside of the professional environments, say outside of military and police, law enforcement, and similar related fields, the culture of gun culture doesn't really have the tools to answer that. We are all individuals. We all make our own choices. We all build our own, you know, our own culture, microcultures around us. But if we are going to stay in an adolescent state and think that we are capable of doing one thing when we are only capable of doing a small subsection of that, then we do ourselves a disservice. And this is, there's another subject that I want to be able to get into, but I have to build it more before we get to there, and that is the dark double-edged sword of the Second Amendment, where there will be people who are more, that think they are more skilled than they are. There will be people who make bad decisions, and while it is our goal to mitigate them, we can't do so without, or we have to do so without creating a worse scenario, without doing something evil ourselves. There is a, being able to shoot, and being able to shoot and hit our target is an important aspect of our industry and our culture. And we're seeing as gun culture sort of expands and we see concerns for safety and well-being. And I think I want to make a shout-out reference to Dirty Civilian, who recently put out a video on the morality of civil war. They make a good point that ultimately our goal is to be moral. It's not good enough just to survive. And if we are lazy now, when harder times come, we will be easier pressed into doing immoral actions. It doesn't justify those actions as being immoral, but we can understand them. And the difference between justification and understanding can be outlined like this. When you experience somebody who, let's say, let's use a culturally relevant subject. If you've ever encountered somebody who fits the definition of being racist, they hold a specifically negative view of a specific ethnicity of person. We can come to understand why they think that way. Maybe they had bad experiences in the past. Maybe they heard a bunch of stories. Maybe there's a combination of the unknown. But it doesn't mean that we justify it. And understanding versus justifying something is critically important for making wise decisions about people, especially people in the use of force. And so while we might say that it is not morally justified that a person holds a view, a racist view, because they had those experiences, we can still understand how they got there. Understanding is different than justifying. Understanding is different than justification. And shooting is different than fighting because in the way that shooting is a subsection of being able to fight, but fighting in our world is much broader, much bigger. And so if gun culture, if you're in gun culture now and you're looking to expand into understanding fighting, I have to give you a warning. And that warning is, be careful how you go about it. There's a reason why we look at people who, let's say, write a hit list with suspicion, because that shows intent. And if I were to sit here on my little stool right now and I would start talking to you about writing a hit list, you would rightly assume that I might have nefarious intent. And there are many parts of fighting that include looking like that. For example, building a target package. Building a target package is a fancy military way of saying figuring out how you're going to get at somebody. Now, that is certainly a major component of fighting, but it is not a major component of shooting. Building a target package signifies intent, and there is good reason that we would be suspicious of somebody who was very public about building a target package, unless they're politically expedient, I guess. That would be the dark negative of it. And so as we are learning how to shoot, we're building confidence in the skill sets. That is very different than learning how to, say, set up, develop, or catch a target in a position of transition. You can see this in display on some, and sometimes you can sometimes see this on display when people are playing paintball. Someone might be an excellent shot, but they're uncomfortable in maneuvering. And so they lose their sense of location or time because they have not done this before. Now, if you were to add on to that, also not being confident with their, it's not a firearm, it's with their paintball gun, then you're going to get a compoundingly worse situation. And so when we're talking about being able to shoot versus being able to fight, fighting has a lot more to do with morality, whereas shooting is simply a skill set. And this helps illustrate how capacity is different than morality. Capacity is also different than strategy. But the difference between capacity and morality in this sense is that you must have the capacity to be able to do the thing in order to be moral, in order to do it morally. And there's a dark way that the West has handled the relationship between capacity and morality. And it implies, sort of nefariously, that if a person is not capable of doing a thing, then they cannot have any moral judgments placed on them for that thing. We'll take an example of a kid being bullied. The caricature of a bully is you have usually the metaphorically stronger character beating up on the weaker kid. The older, the stronger boy beats up on the weaker boy, and we don't really ask questions as to why or how did this come to pass, but we have the case of a bully. We have an aggressor. The bully in this case is presented as the aggressor. It's assumed as the aggressor. But what is the identity of the bully? What is it that we define them by? Are they defined by their strength or by how they use that strength? And what is the identity of the kid being bullied, in this sense, the victim? Is he being bullied because he is weak, or is he doing something else which may not warrant but inspires the action? It draws the ire of the bully. Not that he should cower and hide all the time, but is he going behind the bully's back and creating problems? Did he start the fight, the scenario, metaphorically? Did the person being bullied not necessarily get what he deserves, but did he do something in the past before the bullying relationship began that maybe not justified, but explains how this happened? And so the dark, nefarious injection here is that because we identify the bully as being strong and the kid and the victim as being weak, if we identify as the victim and we identify as weak, we falsely make the assumption that we can do no harm. We can't bully another person because we're weak. And that assumption, the nefariousness of that assumption, comes from claiming a status, a moral status, on the basis of incapability. I could never do that. Just you watch. Just you watch. People, the danger of assuming that someone could never do something is the arrogance of the morally untested. Somebody who has never had to engage with a morally dubious scenario that has consequences according to how he acts. And so in the question of shooting versus fighting, the person who is capable of fighting, is morally held responsible to his capacity, but so is the person who is only capable of shooting. And that is why we train. That is why we practice. That is why we spend time in community building one another up, so that if each of us or one of us is entered into that scenario, we will be better off. It's not about my ego. It's about our capabilities. It's about our country and our families and our communities. And while there is a negative assumption, there's a negative tone that's painted on anyone training, and we certainly have encountered people who are training for nefarious ends, the critical component that we face is that if we get bogged down and assume that shooting and fighting are the same thing, or we get bogged down and assume that I can rest on my laurels because I can hit my 10-inch target at 100 yards, or we settle down into these things, then we set ourselves up for not only perhaps a tactical failure, but certainly a moral one. And that moral one comes in the form of, what do you do when you find yourself in a use of force scenario? Now, we want to answer this, and we want to answer this as well as we can, and we want to continue to answer this question. And we don't want to let it only reside in the court of public opinion, but rather look at how we are training our hands for skill so that we may do the right thing if we are called to do so. With that being the case, this has been the Redacted Culture Cast on the difference between shooting and fighting. If you would like to support the show, you can head over to redactedllc.com. That's where we're going to have our shop. Or you can go over to redactedculture.locals.com and we can have some conversations there. And finally, in closing, don't forget to go check out obsidianarms.com and look at their tool punch sets, because they come with a lifetime warranty. And if you work in the garage and you work on your own equipment, this is an excellent piece to have. That being the case, now go forth and conquer.